GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1338, May 15th, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from the Indiana Turnpike, one of the service plazas near Brighton, Indiana, according to my GPS. It would be far northeastern Indiana, along the Indiana Turnpike, really close to the Indiana-Michigan border. So I spent the night last night at Columbus, Wisconsin, and then got up this morning, kind of, you know, late in the morning, and ate lunch there at that truck stop. They had an Arby's in there, and so I ate lunch in there. And then I headed on over to the place where I picked the load up at this place at Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, which is about 19 miles farther north from where I was at there at Columbus, Wisconsin. And got there, and so it was a little early, and so I sat there for probably about 45 minutes, and then finally the guy came out and he told me which door to back into. And then once they started loading the load, it didn't take them long at all to finish it. And so I got out of there, and so I've made it down here and decided that this was probably as good as any place to stop for the night. And it's kind of cool. Again, never really got warm today. Not really, you know, I don't know, maybe it might have approached 70 degrees, but it is 55 degrees here, you know, before I stopped. According to my truck's thermometer, it was about 55 degrees, and so it's a little cooler, you know, still cool. Now, there is no wind. There was, when I was up in Wisconsin, at least last night, and then I guess even earlier today, it was a little bit windy, but the wind seems to have died down, at least here in Indiana. It's the wind is pretty calm, and so it's just cool. We're in May. So in any case, I've still got probably about 500 miles to go to make it to the destination, Brockford, New York, up west of Rochester. And so I've got all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and part of the day Monday to get there. The delivery appointment is Monday afternoon, and so I've got plenty of time to go 500 miles. So I'm probably, I don't know, I may, obviously I don't want to drive it all at once and get up there too soon. I don't even know if there's a place to park where I'm going to be unloading at. I have to kind of figure that out. There may not be. It looks like it's it's just kind of a small town type area, and there's probably not a truck stop around there, so I probably will park somewhere where there is a truck stop, and then just plan on driving the rest of the way Monday morning, maybe from a truck stop over in the Buffalo area. Yeah, possibly. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out. So, in any case, I was kind of ended up thinking about identity, morality, you know, and I've been talking a lot about the idea of morality and sort of where it comes from, as well as identity and where that comes from. And so I was kind of course, I'm always kind of emailing back and forth with different people on these same topics. Excuse me. And we ended up kind of talking about, kind of back and forth a little bit about the Amish. And you look, looking from the outside in, the Amish are very interesting in that, you know, you look at that and you look at them from the outside, and it would seem that they have very peaceful lives, and you know, and it seems like their society, you know, their community, they really get a lot of community support, and it almost seems like an ideal sort of lifestyle that they have, just sort of casually looking from the outside in. But there is kind of a problem with it. If you can really sort of look at it objectively, even though the Amish philosophy, as I understand it, they don't, you know, like the idea of violence, and they sort of adhere to this philosophy of nonviolence. But the sort of using mind control tactics, sort of soft coercive tactics, to kind of get people into, you know, to sort of stay in the society. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing how, you know, how that works. How they, you know, kind of get, you know, people are born into that society, and even though they have to end up choosing as, you know, teenagers, they've got a couple of years, as I understand it, to kind of choose, you know, they can kind of sow their wild oats, as it were. And then they have to make a choice. They either, if they join the church, then they can become Amish. But if not, then they have to go on their merry way, and they're shunned. And it, you know, people can argue that, well, they, you know, they've given the society has given them a very limited education, and they're not really prepared to go out into the quote unquote English world, as they call it. And, you know, what are they to do if they're just kind of thrust, you know, if they choose not to join the church, then they're just sort of thrust out into the world, and they're kind of cut off from their friends and family. And, you know, kind of depending on how strictly they adhere to this shunning practice. So that is it's a sort of a mind control technique. Now, of course, every single human being has been subjected to mind control. I don't care who you are, where you were raised, what society you were raised in, you've been subjected to mind control. And your parents did. It's starting with your parents. You know, and it's just a simple form. I can give you a very simple example of it. When you were a kid, or let's say you have a kid, but, you know, let's just talk about you for a minute, or talk about me for a minute. When you were a kid, You know, and they, you get a new pair of shoes or a new pair of clothes, some kind of clothes, or maybe some sort of a hat or whatever it is. Or just, you know, or a new toy maybe. And then, you know, the parents, you know, the people around you, they make a big deal out of it. Oh, look at little Johnny's new haircut, or little Susie's new dress, or, you know, the shirt or whatever it is. And they make a big thing out of it. You know, and then, of course, the little kid just kind of, the wrong side of the kid's ego sort of laps that up. And they sort of end up being taught that, you know, to seek approval, because you know, once your ego eats, the wrong side of your ego sort of eats out of the trough of approval, it needs more of it. It's like crack cocaine for the ego, approval. And that teaches you to live out of the approval of others. And so, therefore, people can manipulate you. You'll do anything for that approval, and people can manipulate you with the carrot of that approval. And then, you know, it's kind of like pain, pleasure of the approval, pain of the disapproval. It's, you know, if you get the disapproval, it's like having the rug jerked out from underneath you. All they have to do is either withhold it, or even worse, tell you you look awful. You know, and there are some, you know, and there are people, there are adults. All you have to do, and we've all probably known people like this. All you have to do is tell people, "Oh, you don't look good today. Are you sick? You're really looking bad." And there, I swear to God, there are people that you can actually talk into feeling bad, and you know, and you can kind of talk them into feeling sick, just by telling them that they don't look good. And, you know, but that's, and these people are adults. We all know people that are like that. But in any case, that is mind control. It's manipulation. And with, you know, moms tend to do that with food. You know, do your homework and you can have dessert. Or do this, and here's the goodie. Or if you don't do this, I'm going to withhold the food. You're not going to get any dessert. You're not going to get any supper. You're going to go to bed without any supper. That's mind control. You know, and how do we know what our real identity is? It's a really tough thing if you think about it. Are we just a collection of behaviors that our parents sort of programmed into us, and the parents and the greater society around us sort of programmed into us? And if that's all we are, is that all that we're meant to be? You know, is that really the purpose of your life, to just exhibit the right, you know, just kind of play out your programming, whatever you happen to be around? Because part of that's just going to be by chance, the people that you're around, or even the parents that you have. And are you going to be happy just living that program, someone else's programming out? And is that really why, you know, I believe in God, of course. Is that why we're here, just to sort of exhibit the right behavior? Or is there something more? I believe there's something more, of course. I believe that we're here to sort of be born into a system. As fallen, is sort of like as human beings, so we're sort of born into a system where we end up becoming programmed, because we have this, you know, this idea of being born in sin, being born a sort of missing the mark, as it were, because that's literally what sin means. It means to miss the mark. I believe we're born into this system, and we sort of find out that we become programmed, that we're in other words, we're slaves. We become slaves of our environment, slaves of the people around us, you know, and even worse, slaves of the government. But I believe that at some point, some of us will begin to ask the question, is this my identity? Why am, you know, this, I'm not really happy with it, with living out someone else's programming. You know, and you begin to look for something more. But how this ties into the idea of morality, on the one hand, you can say, well, if we can just program everybody the same way, sort of externally program everyone the same way through, you know, externalized pressures, program everybody the sort of the same way so that we all kind of think alike, act alike, think alike, then everything's fine. But then, of course, you have people that are arguing about, well, is what's right and wrong? And who are you to say what's right and wrong? And then, of course, the wrong side of everyone's ego sort of enters in, and then you have, that's really the source, that's really kind of the source of conflict. Because everyone's sort of like a little god that's trying, you know, fighting with the other gods, the would-be gods. And you know, so you can kind of have an externalized sort of identity. And maybe, you know, to a certain extent, I think that's what, you know, I've talked about, you know, played the films audio from the film audios from the 1950s and the early 60s, and you know, thinking back, and you watch the TV programs, of course, and the movies from the from those years, from the 1950s, and there seemed to be, you know, there was different peer pressure. And there were less, you look statistically, there were less kids being born out of wedlock, and sex wasn't being taught. They weren't giving sex lessons in the schools, and so on and so forth. But in the form of sex, so-called sex education, it's just sex lessons. But, you know, so that wasn't there back then. But I think a lot of people were just externally programmed. And again, is that the ideal? Is it all about just our behavior? Are we all meant to kind of, if we were all just externally programmed, would everything be fine? No, I wouldn't be happy with that. I couldn't live in an Amish society, for example. That would be a living hell, because, you know, your behavior sort of externally programmed, you know, sort of prescribed, and this is what is expected of you. And, you know, you can't be an individual. How can you, you're not really, you're just sort of acting out externalized programming, and perhaps in large part that was what was happening in the 50s. Now that may be beneficial from a statistical point of view, but the problem is that you're still not who you could be. You still have no identity. You're just simply being externally programmed. And in a sense, you're not even real. You're not genuine. You're just a program person. So I believe that, you know, it's one thing to have sort of programmed, you know, nice programmed behavior, you know, where you seem to be a nice person and all and so on and so forth. That's one thing, to have nice programmed behavior, but that still isn't good enough. The ideal, my ideal world. Let's talk about my ideal world. In my ideal world, every person in that world would be genuine. Every person in that world would have a genuine identity. And it might look very much the same, you know, and people might behave very much the same. But it would be different. There'd be a subtle difference. Because if you're genuinely who you were meant to be, then you're naturally going to be moral. You know, there's a natural morality that you don't even have to think about being moral. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to even think about rules, you know, all kinds of externalized rules and regulations and what, you know. Because if it comes naturally, if you have that genuine natural identity, you've got a direct connection to that, then you don't need the rules, because you could take the rules away and you're not going to murder, you're not going to rape, you're not going to rob, you're not going to steal, you're not going to pillage, etc., etc., etc. Now, there are people that argue that we're just all basically programmed robots, and our parents have to program us. You know, if we weren't programmed, in other words, we would just be a blank slate. We would be nothing. Now, that may be true to a certain extent, because we come into this world, this is an imperfect world, and so therefore we're going to come into an imperfect existence, and so we have to be something, you know, we have to have some sort of an imperfect identity coming from the outside in order to be, you know, to exist at all. And some of us, not all of us, but some of us are not happy with that identity. But there are people that think that we're just, you know, that it's just all programming, and that, you know, some, they'll even say some coercion is necessary. Your parents, they have to use pain and pleasure and kind of coerce you, you know, in some ways in order to get you to be a good person. Well, if some coercion is okay, then why not all coercion? You know, if some of it's okay, then how come all of it isn't okay? You know, there's a kind of a conflict there. And then where do you draw the line? Is it okay to paddle your kids, for example? If that's fine, then how hard do you, you know, how hard can you paddle them? Do you have to have a special paddle some sort of a pressure meter on it, you know, some kind of a sensor on it that'll call the government up and tell them if you're hitting the kid too hard, for example. You know, of course, there are a lot of people that say, oh, you should never paddle your kid. You know, so then, you know, you get into a complete argument about, you know, well, what is coercion and what's not, and how much of it is okay, how much of it isn't. Is it psychologically damaging if you tell your kid to go to their room without supper? Are you abusing them? You know, so you get into all kinds of an area where there's all kinds of different arguments. But I contend that, you know, we come into this world, it's an imperfect world, we are imperfect creatures, and we have to be something. You know, and so we end up absorbing our environment. If you're born in Borneo, as I've said many times, you'd be a cannibal. You know, if you're born in France, you're going to end up being a Frenchman and kind of having a Frenchman mentality. You know, and if you're born in Mexico, you're going to be a Mexican. You know, you're going to absorb that culture. You're going to kind of absorb the culture that you're born into, absorb the culture of your parents. And but then again, some of us are not happy with just living that out, living out that programming, because we absorb it, we kind of become programmed by our environment, and some of us are not happy just living out that programming. And I believe there's something more that's available. Yeah, something more in the form of common sense, something more in the form of a kind of latent identity that comes with us a latent set of ethics that's not programmed, but that is from our Creator. Now, there are people that don't believe in a Creator. That's fine too. If you don't want to believe in a Creator, that's perfectly fine. But then again, you know, these are interesting philosophical questions. And where does identity come from? You know, and what is coercion? What isn't? You know, and they're interesting things to think about. So, anyway, I've got another voice file that was sent to me by, it's been a number of days ago, from Scott Mitchell, thescottpodcast.com, the Uncommon Sense Podcast. And so this is about 12 minutes and 12 seconds, so let's go ahead and listen to Scott. So here's Scott.
Okay, Tom, you were talking about the tax system. You kind of stopped on that on another comment I was making. I'm catching up on your podcast here, slowly but surely. Anyway, the thing I was talking about was people and paying taxes and credit cards and defaulting and all that. And you were saying fully 50% of people don't pay any taxes because they have various loopholes and other things that they get out of. Yeah, here's a question for you, Tom. Who do you think does the most of this finding of loopholes so that they don't end up paying any taxes? Would it be poor people, middle class, or upper class, or if you will, the richer people? Who do you think would do more of that? Because that'd be interesting to know, you know, who exactly it is that is doing the most of this. Because I used to have kind of a circular debate on that. And the idea was people who would say to me, well, you know, the rich people pay more taxes than anybody. And I'd say, okay. But then some of those same people would say, the rich people have more loopholes than anybody. And I'd say, well, how can they be having loopholes and not paying as much taxes, but at the same time be paying more taxes than anybody. So who is it that, you know, what's the truth? Do the rich people pay more taxes, or do they have more loopholes? I don't know. Quite honestly, I don't know what the statistics are on that, but it would be interesting to have them, to know, you know, where there were the most loopholes, and, you know, what people were getting these. There's an ad running on my station right now, and it's called, it's for a company called something like American Tax Relief, they name themselves, and it's something close to that. That may actually be the name, I'm not really sure. But the whole ad starts off and ends with people doing this. I was supposed to pay $80,000 in taxes, but I only paid $10,000 in taxes. It's more like my taxes were $4 million, but I paid $1 million. And I'm getting used to these numbers because I've been seeing them. They've got these little cardboard or whatever they are, signs that they hold up with the two numbers on them. You know, I was supposed to pay, $1,500, and I only paid $300. And they're reducing these people's taxes by many fold, so that they're basically paying, you know, well, way less than 50% of the taxes that they were supposed to pay. And it's like this company wants you to applaud them. Yay, you beat them out. Good for you. Good company. And I'm thinking, here's people that legitimately owed this kind of taxes, and this company, what this company does is goes out and convinces the government you're never going to get this money. So you might, if you'd like to get something, let's settle on this. And they settle. They're tax attorneys. And there's a lot of them that do that out there, advertising, especially right now. And this goes on every year, I'm sure. And so I wonder, you know, like, do people really applaud people who cheat the government out of money and don't pay their fair share of taxes? But what do you think about that, Tom? I think you're probably of the same ilk that I am. I think you're probably one who would pay, who always has paid their taxes, always will pay their taxes. You don't go out of your way to try to sneak out of it, like many of these other people are. And sometimes they do it perfectly legal. Robert Kiyosaki, who teaches all these get-rich-quick courses, and recently has taken a turn for the bad, unfortunately, and the people going around doing his company's bidding are getting some very bad reports, and they're in bad with Better Business Bureau and stuff, I think, from what I read. But I used to like him back in the day, and he used to talk about how the rules, it was the golden rule, you know, the people with the gold made the rules, and that essentially the rules were made to help the rich succeed. And they were made by the rich, for the rich, to help the rich succeed. I wonder what you think about that, you know, the idea that these loopholes, in many cases, are put there just for the rich. He was talking about some of it, and I know that these are the cases. Let's say you call yourself, you know, XYZ business, and all of a sudden, as business expenses, you can write off your house because you're using it in your business. When you go traveling, even to exotic places, you can write that off if you're transacting business on these trips. You know, if you have transportation, that gets written off. If you, you know, your vehicle and the cost associated with that, you can just about make anything in your entire life a business write-off. You know, from the food you eat to the place you sleep to everything, you could literally write it all off.
Well, let me interrupt. What you're saying is absolutely true, but you'd better be keeping all kinds of records if you do that. You know, you don't, you know, because there's certain things that the IRS really will crack down on. There's certain things that sort of stick up as a red flag if you, let's say, for example, that you've got, let's say you make a certain level of income and you're donating more, far more than average, let's say, to your local church. And in other words, you're giving more of your income than what the average would be. That kind of sticks out like a flag to the IRS. You know, and they've really, in recent years, they've kind of cracked down on home offices. And so there are all kinds of rules about how big the home office has to be and, you know, and what you're using the home office equipment for and so on and so forth. And if you're using a car for a business, there are rules about percentages, about how much you actually have to use that only for the business, and if you use, you know, and how much you can use it for personal use. And so you've really got to keep track of mileages and all kinds of stuff like that. And you know, if the rules, the tax rules, are horrifically complicated, the tax codes are just, and it's probably is true for probably every Western country, you know, to varying degrees, I don't know, but certainly the U.S. tax code is a nightmare. But what I do, I use tax, what's one of those tax programs? TurboTax. I use TurboTax, and so I simply, it kind of takes a fill in the blank approach, and I fill in the blanks, and it kind of calculates everything out and for me, and so that's pretty much how I do it. I just kind of use the fill in the blank approach with TurboTax, and it kind of takes care of it all for me. But I know that there are loopholes when it comes to people with very large incomes, and they've got investments and so on and so forth, and businesses. There are a lot of things that they can, you know, that they can do to reduce their taxes. And of course, a lot of these tax loopholes, so-called loopholes, and write-offs, tax write-offs, a lot of those are sort of designed to get people to do certain things. You know, the lawmakers, when they write these laws, come up with plans. Well, they think, well, it would be good if we could sort of manipulate people into doing, you know, let's say doing more solar. You know, we want them to have more solar energy. So therefore, now there's this, you know, you can. There are a lot of write-offs if you put in a solar energy system in your home, for example. And you know, there are different types of tax, so-called tax incentives, to sort of manipulate people into doing different things. So, but I don't know. The idea, I don't know. My feeling is you're better off just being honest. You know, you can go back, you know, I can kind of use the example. You know, there have always been people that are trying to cheat on their cable television. They don't want to pay for their cable television, and so they're figuring out ways of hooking up to the cable to sort of steal the cable, or hooking into the electric system and not having an electric meter, or somehow bypassing the electric meter. There are always people that are stealing cable, stealing electricity, maybe even stealing water from the utility department. Or another one was, stealing satellite service, coming up with ways coming up with these illegal decoders so they could steal the satellite service. Free satellite service. You know, get the pay channels for free. There are people that do that to this day. And that's wrong. And, you know, the bottom line is, if you're doing something like that, you have to justify that in your mind. You have to do something in your mind. You have to somehow justify it in your mind that, oh, the cable company is not going to miss that. They're taking in plenty of money, or they're not going to miss that. Or people do the same thing with the electric company. Oh, the electric company, they're just big bad electric company. They're ripping us off. I'm going to get it for free. And invariably, people will do this. They do something funny in their mind in order to sort of justify wrong is right, right is wrong. And by the way, that's why when you, you know, your friends and relatives that you mentioned seem shocked that you didn't cheat on your taxes, you know, you were sort of upsetting that, and sort of you were kind of acting as an sort of reminding them from the outside of the conscience that they were distancing themselves from on the inside. And so, you know, it's kind of like if you're around people that drink alcohol, and, you know, I just don't drink alcohol. I've never liked the taste of it. I stay away. So therefore, I just figure stay away from it. And so if you're around people that drink, you know, in some cases I've observed this over the years, because sometimes I'm in a situation where people are drinking. I don't like it necessarily, but sometimes I've been in situations where people have alcohol and they're passing around drinks, and I just tell them, nope, don't want it. And there are some people, it seems to sort of bother them that I'm not drinking. I know what it is. It's their own conscience is kind of bothering them, because it's kind of like they want everyone around them to sort of participate in the behavior that they really know is wrong. They want everybody to kind of participate in the behavior that they kind of are distancing themselves from, to try to get rid, you know, the guilt aspect. They want everybody to participate, and then if somebody doesn't, it's just a thorn in their side. And it sort of, you know, it kind of reminds them that, hey, that, you know, there's something wrong with this behavior. And you know, and they'll try to turn it around and make it seem like there's something wrong with you, but it's really them. So but generally speaking, you should always, you know, if you feel tempted to do something wrong, you know, to cheat in some way, you know, just kind of think about it. And then, you know, ask yourself the question, well, if I do this, you know, am I doing all this justifying in my mind that wrong is right and right is wrong? And if, you know, and it's the small things, the really small things that are the most important. Because if you can be tempted to steal a penny, then how much greater is the temptation going to be to steal $1,000 or $10,000 or $1,000,000? You know, so the small things really count. And you know, so, but this whole tax thing, you know, and then you have people that come along and you know, they'll try to twist it around, and you know, and someone that is following the law, and they're taking legitimate, you know, they're doing the legitimate things, in order to reduce their taxes, if it's legitimate, then there's nothing wrong with it because it's part of the law. Now, you know, and there are people that are that'll try to twist that and else they think that's wrong. But, you know, I have a problem with the entire tax system and the way it's set up, because the more that tax system takes away, let's say it is a rich person and they're being taxed heavily. Well, how many times have you gotten a job from a poor guy? Never. Your employer, whether it's either going to be a corporation or an individual, your employer always has money. Probably, you know, usually they have more money than you do. There's a rich guy that started the company. And if you tax too much of that rich guy's money away, there's going to be less of it for the business. And so that's, you know, this idea, you know, the government taking so much money, and even with the 50% of the population not paying any taxes or federal income taxes at all, they're still paying taxes. They're paying local taxes. They're paying sales taxes. They're paying gasoline taxes. They're still being taxed out the yin-yang. They may think they're getting away with it, but they're still being taxed. But our government is just, it's like a cancer. And it's metastasized, and it's turned in, it's like an aggressive form of cancer at this point, and it's getting bigger. It's like a parasite. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and taking a bigger and bigger and bigger chunk of our lifeblood. And it's leaving less and less and less for us. And so our entire tax system is really out of control. And so anyway, let's go ahead. I could keep talking for, you know, another hour, but let's go ahead and listen to the rest of Scott's comment.
To the point where you wouldn't owe any taxes. The point where, on paper, you wouldn't show a profit. And this is what I guess a lot of people do, and probably pretty much legally. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe there aren't a lot of people who are in business doing this, but then maybe there are, because I actually heard Robert Kiyosaki talking about this exact thing. I can probably dig up the tapes that I got here and let you have a listen to him, because he talks about this stuff. And, you know, on one hand, you say, well, God bless America, because anybody can be rich and use these things, and isn't it nice that the rich are in control and I can join their ranks? But another part of you ought to be a little bit upset, I would think, Tom, to think that they are doing things like that. So, what do you think?
Okay, now the other problem, you know, there you said, well, that should upset you that some people aren't paying. Well, you shouldn't, you know, maybe you can be, you say the word upset, but a lot of people resent. You know, if people get tricked into resenting, they think, well, you know, they're not paying their fair share, or they have more than I do. And then you get into this idea of resentment, and, you know, where you're actually kind of playing God in your own mind. And it becomes a distraction. It becomes a way of not looking at yourself. And, you know, I can't control other people's behavior. The only thing I can do is to have a willingness to look at myself, but at the same time try to be as good an influence as I can with other people, you know, kind of be a modifying influence, a good modifying influence. The only way I can do that is to look at myself and, you know, kind of express my beliefs, etc., etc., etc. But I cannot control other people's behavior, and nor do I really want to. It's up to them to, you know, to kind of control their own behavior. So, anyway, let's go ahead and listen to some more.
Because because you know, somebody said once, yeah, we should just take a certain percentage of all money made by businesses. Well, how do you determine what money businesses make if you don't know what the cost of the product is? You know, because the profit is, you take the cost of the product and you subtract how much they sold it for. And if you sold it for, you know, $100 more than the cost of the product, then you made $100. But if you don't know what the cost of the product is, you can't do that. And there are many costs to a product. The people you paid to assemble it or help you make it are a cost of the product. Your travel could very well be. The vehicle you maintain to travel, you know, could be very well be. There are many things that could be a cost of your product, a realistic cost of your product. So how, basically, you're trying to find a way to find out when these people are lying to you and saying that food and other things are a cost of the product. People will go off to business meetings. Let's just say they're an executive of a company, and they're trying to promote the company's product. Promotion is a cost of a product. And so they go off on these exorbitant vacations, but while they're on them, they have other people come along with them, and they may even pay for them, and that'll be a company cost. So basically, their vacation plus these other people's is a cost, because they're whining and dining clients who may eventually get on board and buy the product and promote it, and they'll say, we've cut a deal, kind of like, you know, Apple cutting a deal with AT&T. Maybe AT&T wined and dined Apple, or vice versa, but whoever wined and dined who, that person has some expenses in the wining and dining.
Well, let me interrupt again. That's absolutely true. And Apple is a great example, because they obviously they charge a premium for their products. Way more, quite a bit more percentage-wise, you know, if you look at the typical Apple product. An iPhone is kind of more expensive to, you know, once you get it and you have the, you get the service through AT&T, it's going to be more expensive than other smartphones. If you buy an Apple laptop, I've got a couple of them, they are far more expensive than their, if you just look at them from a hardware standpoint, than a comparable Dell machine or other machines. So on and so forth. And but then again, you know, Apple has made the products desirable. So what went into that? You know, so this idea that people have, oh, well, you know, I was listening to something the other day and some guy was complaining that, you know, they're charging all these millions of dollars for the Super Bowl commercials and we're all paying for that. It's a tax on society that we're, you know, that these companies are paying for this advertising, and you know, advertising is a necessary part of the process of marketing. And you know, if you don't want to pay, you know, if you don't want the product, you don't, you know, there's nobody with a gun to your head telling you got to buy it, except now. The government's telling you, you must buy health insurance. That's the exception that we've never had before. But with, you know, normal everyday products, you don't have to buy the product. Nobody's telling you you have to buy the Coke or the Pepsi or whatever it is, and they're spending millions of dollars on marketing. You know, so, you know, and there's a jillion other examples. So, you know, this idea that somebody can kind of come along and just second guess, and we want to take the profit out of everything, and you know, then people will just do the work, and there won't be any profit. And you know, I just, that's stupid thinking. And people can kind of fall for that if, you know, if they're really not thinking properly, they can kind of end up falling for that. And you know, it's really a ridiculous way to think of things, and it doesn't reflect reality.
So I don't know how you close up those kind of loopholes, and so unfortunately they'll probably remain open, And unfortunately, there will be people abusing them. And that means that there will be people not paying their fair share of taxes. And I don't know what the answer is. It's something we could talk about more about. It'd be interesting to do so. But I think it is a big problem, and I think it's disgusting, you know, that all these people getting tremendous tax breaks like this ad says. I look at these people and say, just shake my head, you know, like, you know, what a pathetic lot of people that they're proud of the fact that they cheated the country out of this money. They should be holding their head low, you know, that they couldn't pay it, you know, that they would have, but they couldn't pay it. But maybe you disagree. Maybe you don't think that paying taxes is patriotic. Maybe you think it's more patriotic to cheat them out of it. I doubt you do, but there are people that think that way.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. No, you know, this idea that paying taxes is patriotic, I know who came up with that, and it's, you know, obviously we all have to pay some taxes. We're not going to just skate out, you know, because I believe legitimately we should have, you know, the government is there to... for our defense. We get together for our defense. We get together to build roads and so on and so forth, public utilities, etc., etc., etc. I think that's absolutely legitimate. Where I have a real problem is with all the social spending and paying people we're paying the government. We're being taxed to kill babies. We're being taxed to essentially corrupt children's, you know, starting with children, but corrupt people's morals. To we're being taxed to pay for our moral decline as a society, and that's absolutely wrong. And so, you know, this idea that you should pay more taxes and be more patriotic, I think that's absurd. Obviously, if we're law-abiding citizens, we should pay our taxes. But on the other hand, there's nothing to stop me from working to cut out programs. There's nothing to stop me from decrying the things that are leading to and sort of sustaining this, you know, this moral decline in which we find ourselves. And, you know, so I think that we should be cutting taxes. I think that we should be really looking to cut down the size of the government. By the way, I've also got I've got this clip. This is Governor Chris Christie of all places, New Jersey. And he was recently elected. He's a Republican governor, which was kind of a shock. You know, New Jersey, pretty liberal place, liberal Democrat, corrupt mafia. They elected a Republican governor, and this guy is, you know, he's amazing. This is a press conference where there's this reporter that's, you know, why are you being so confrontational, blah blah blah. You'll hear a little bit of the guy's question, and then most of this is Governor Chris Christie's response. And it's really interesting to listen to. So here's that clip.
Tom.
Governor, do you think the sort of confrontational tone you take improves your odds of getting this through legislation?
You know, Tom, you must be the thinnest-skinned guy in America, because you think that's a confrontational tone. Then, you should really see me when I'm pissed. And that's not confrontational. All right. So, you know, I love when people say they don't want to have argument. That's what we were sent here for. They believe in certain things. They believe in bigger government, higher taxes, and more spending. Here it is. Bigger government, higher taxes, more spending. I believe in less government, lower taxes, and in empowering local officials who are elected by their citizens to be able to fix their problems. That may lead to a disagreement or two. Now, I could say it really nicely. I could say it in the way that you all might be more comfortable with. You know, maybe we could go back to the last administration where I could say it in a way you wouldn't even understand it. Okay? But the fact of the matter is, this is who I am, and this is who the people elected. And so you guys want to continue to talk about this process stuff, about my tone, my combativeness. You know, we got them standing in the doorway of the Senate saying they won't even hold a hearing on an enormously qualified Supreme Court nominee. You know, but that's not combative or confrontational. Of course not. You know, only I'm combative or confrontational. Listen, everybody plays to their part. This is who I am. Like it or not, you guys are stuck with me for 4 years. And I'm going to say things directly. When you ask me questions, I'm going to answer them directly, straightly, bluntly. And nobody in New Jersey is going to have to wonder where I am on an issue. And I think they've had enough of politicians who make them wonder. Because you know most of the time why they make them wonder, Tom? They make them wonder so they got an escape hatch. So they have an escape hatch. And I'm not interested in an escape hatch. I came here to govern, not to escape. I came here to govern, not to worry about re-election. I came here to do what people sent me here to do. And so, blunt, direct, maybe you might say, honest and refreshing. Maybe we can see that in your paper tomorrow.
Okay, so that's Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. I like that guy. I'd like to see him cloned thousands of times and people like that be elected to all kinds of different governor posts, senator, congressman, representatives. I like that. That guy could, I'd like to see him run for president. This clip, I've got the clip. There's a post on my website, truckertompodcast.com. It's a video, a YouTube video clip of this is where I got the audio from. And it's interesting because as you watch him talk, his aides that are standing behind him are, they're just laughing themselves silly. And, I get the impression that this guy is like that all the time. He's really funny and serious at the same time, and he must be a hoot to work for and be around. So, but really enjoyed that, Anyway, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone has a great weekend. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.